So Hare Krishna. Thank you for coming. We can discuss a little bit about Krishna consciousness and what the aim of life is. It's a good topic to consider sometimes what it's like. If we're going somewhere, we have to have some place in mind that we're going. Before we start, we should have some idea what the destination should be. Whenever we start a journey, we don't just say, well, we'll just start and we don't know where we're going or what we're doing or where we'll end up. We need to know what is our destination. So then the question is, well, what are we trying to accomplish in life? Now, some people will say that life is meant to just enjoy. That you're supposed to try to get as much enjoyment out of life as possible. And that makes sense. We all want enjoyment. Nobody wants distress, but everyone likes to have enjoyable things happen to them. Like nobody wants to go to the doctor for a physical checkup and find out that he's got cancer, terminal cancer. Nobody's praying for that. And no one's hoping for that. But we hope that we get happy things. People are nice to us, and we're successful, and we enjoy, we're healthy. We know. So that's not untrue. We do like happiness, and we want happiness. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's absolutely nothing wrong with desiring to get happiness. So then, all right, so we can all agree that the goal of our life is to get happiness, to maximize happiness, and to minimize distress, because distress interferes with happiness. You agree? We just discussed that. So if you're happy and then everything's going great and then you find out that your house burned down, well then it's... that it can ruin your whole day, you know. So we want to maximize happiness and minimize distress. And everyone's trying to do that in their own way. And there have been many books written about how to do that. And there's more books all the time coming out on how to increase your happiness. And even the advertising that we see on the billboards. You have billboards? You have? Advertising? Not so many. Or you do have a lot. Not as many as America, but America we have all over the place. Advertising. And they're telling us how to increase our happiness. And usually they say, well, if you have this car, you'll really increase your happiness if you buy this car. Or if you smoke this cigarette, you'll increase your happiness. If you drink this particular type of liquor, you'll increase your happiness. And so it goes. So many people are giving us advice on how we can increase our happiness. Some people, if you travel to this place, you'll definitely increase your happiness. So, many people are busy trying all these different things. And then, there's more advertising. If you get a big house, you'll have more happiness. And if you dress in this way. So, on and on, there's millions of things that we're told that we should acquire, and then we can get more happiness. So this is called the materialistic world. This is the materialistic goals of life. Is we have set up a principle that if you get more things, then you're more happy. It's kind of a direct proportion, right? Otherwise, why are people working so hard trying to get more money? Because with more money, you can buy more things, and with more things, you can get more happiness, of course. But there's a before I came to Krishna consciousness, I studied some economics. So there's a law in economics called the law of diminishing marginal returns. Some of you may be familiar with it. So what it says is that for each unit that we try to enjoy, there's a certain amount of pleasure or utility from the first unit, but each successive unit, the amount of pleasure, it decreases. For example, let's say you want an ice cream cone, so you pay $1. All right. Because you consider that with that dollar, I'm going to purchase an ice cream cone that will give me more than a dollar's worth of pleasure. So it's a good deal. So you do it. You eat the ice cream, and someone asks you, how was it? It was great. Really good. It was worth every bit of that dollar and more. Okay. Someone says, why don't you take another one? Well, maybe I just will. All right, here, give me another one. Another dollar. Takes another one. Someone asks, so how was that? Well, that one was not as good as the first one. But it was good. It was, you know, I'm happy I spent the dollar. It was fine. Someone said, why don't you take another one? No. I don't want another one. Say, well, I tell you what. If you get another one, I'll pay for half of it. And you pay half, I'll pay half. So then he thinks, well, all right, I don't really want that. I'm not going to get that much pleasure, not a dollar's worth of pleasure for sure. I won't pay a dollar. But 50 cents, maybe I'll get 50 cents worth of pleasure. So all right, so he puts the 50 cents, the other man puts, and he gets the third ice cream and he eats it. Man says, how was that one? He says, well, wasn't that good, but it was worth 50 cents. So he says, okay, take another one. So I don't want another one. I've had three. I'm full. I really don't want another one. So someone says, how about if I give it to you for free? He says, no, I won't even take it if you give it to me for free. Because it's not going to be pleasure anymore. In fact, it's going to be displeasure. If I take a fourth one, it's going to be painful to eat it. So he says, all right, you won't take it for free. How about if I give you $25? So now the man is thinking, well, I'm not going to get a dollar's pleasure. I'm not going to get 50 cents pleasure. I'm not even going to break even. It's going to be suffering. But with the $25, I can get some pleasure some later time. So maybe with the $25, I can make up for the displeasure that I get now. And so I don't have to work tomorrow, then I can take the $25. So he takes it. So you see, everything in the material world is like that. As you keep trying to enjoy more of them, the pleasure diminishes. It's called the diminishing return. You get less and less pleasure. And it works for, if you analyze anything, it works out like that in the material world. Now, it's surprising that they know this, but yet, you know, this is in the economics books, but still, we go on very enthusiastically trying to get more things, more material things. When we're told that the pleasure diminishes, and we've experienced that the pleasure diminishes. Now, on the other hand, there's another principle in spiritual pleasure. Spiritual pleasure is called Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. It's an increasing ocean of bliss. In other words, every time you perform some activity in spiritual yoga, bhakti yoga, the pleasure that you get increases. And it increases, and then it goes on increasing, and it keeps increasing unlimitedly. Well, this is really a different paradigm. It's a whole different way of looking at things. So if you had your choice of trying to get pleasure in the material realm that always decreases, and trying to get pleasure on the spiritual where it's always increasing, which would you choose? It makes sense. Now, you may say, well, it sounds good, but how can I be sure? I've heard so many promises that I'm going to get pleasure. And now I'm quite skeptical that I'm actually going to increase my pleasure. So you can try. For example, try chanting Hare Krishna. If you chant Hare Krishna the first time, you'll get some pleasure, and then try it again, and then and again. And if you keep chanting, your pleasure will increase. You'll get more pleasure from chanting. And someone may say, oh no, that's just, you're self-hypnotizing yourself to believe that. Auto-suggestion. You're trying to make yourself believe that you're getting more pleasure, but it's all in the mind, it's all imagination. So, you say, no, it's not in the mind, it's not imagination. The Hare Krishna chant actually brings one more and more pleasure. And if you don't believe it, try chanting Hare Krishna, and then try for maybe a few weeks, do an experiment. For a few weeks, chant Hare Krishna. And then after that, the next 2 weeks, chant Coca-Cola. And see which one gives you more pleasure. You can do the experiment yourself. You don't have to pay any money to anyone to do the investigation. You can do it yourself and see. Which one do you think will give you more pleasure? Hare Krishna will give more pleasure than chanting Coca-Cola. And that proves it. And you can try anything. Not just, you may say, well, Coca-Cola, that's absurd, that's ridiculous. Okay, something meaningful. Anyone have any idea what we could chant? Some other thing that might give us... You're okay, and I'm okay. Yeah, you could try that. You're okay, I'm okay. You're okay, I'm okay. You could try that for a few weeks and see. Have you tried it? No. But people have been chanting Hare Krishna for millions and millions of years. And not just anyone's chanting. These are the great sages, the great learned, enlightened, saintly persons have been chanting Hare Krishna and getting more and more pleasure. And there are some that just, they chant almost constantly and they get unlimited pleasure. Ramananda, Ramananda. So Rama means the reservoir of all pleasure. We chant Hare Krishna and Hare Rama. Rama means the reservoir of all pleasure. Krishna means the all-attractive supreme person. And Hare is the energy of the supreme. So the name itself, the mantra itself, has spiritual potency because these are names of the supreme. And in the absolute world, in the spiritual realm, name and object are the same. Here, name and object are not the same. if you chant water, 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 that doesn't quench your thirst if you're thirsty. But if you chant Hare Krishna, Krishna is personally there in his name. Nama Chintamani Krishna, Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha, Purna Shuddho Nitya Mukto Binnadvam Nami Namino. The Vedas explain that on the absolute platform there's no difference between the object and the name of the object. Nor is there any difference between the object and the form of the object. Nor is there any difference between the object and discussions about the object. Nor is there any difference between the object and things that are related to the object. It's really quite a absolute understanding. So Krishna's name is absolutely Krishna, and because Krishna is absolutely blissful and spiritual, one who chants Krishna's name is connecting with that absolute pleasure and absolute knowledge. That's called yoga. Yoga means to connect. So the ultimate connection, yoga means to connect with the Supreme. It doesn't mean to connect. Well, you can use it. Of course, people misuse so many words. So you could use yoga to talk about some mundane connection, but it's not really meant for that. The actual term yoga means to connect with the Supreme. Whenever you see the word used in the Vedic scriptures, you'll see that it refers to connecting with the Supreme. So, let's talk about pleasure again. But we want to maximize our pleasure. So we already found out that material pleasures, the more you try to enjoy them, the more they seem to diminish in pleasure. That's a problem right off the bat. Now, another thing about material pleasures is that even if you've found something that you're enjoying, like, for example, that ice cream cone, he was enjoying it, the first one. Remember, he was really enjoying the first one. That was the best one. But how long could he enjoy it? It lasted maybe 5 minutes, and then he was gone. That enjoyment was no longer there. He couldn't savor it. If he tried to, you know, stretch it out, let's say he tried to make it longer, so he just took a little bit at a time, little taste, but then it wouldn't be so much pleasure. So, you know, he'd do it for 2 hours, take a little bit. I want to stretch out the pleasure. I want to make it last. So he'd take a little bit, but it's questionable whether or not he would get any more pleasure that way. Most likely he'd get even less pleasure. It'd be melting all over the and, you know, just tasting a little bit of this sweet ice cream is not going to. So there's a problem with time also. Not only does it diminish, but there's a time factor. You have to enjoy it in a certain period of time, and that time is quite short. You can't seem to stretch out the pleasure into a long, even if you try. And people do try. They try to stretch out the pleasure to last longer. But it doesn't work. And so we can say that pleasure in the material world is really quite temporary. It doesn't last as long as we would like it to last. I mean, the perfect example is sex life. Everyone would like it to last for a long time, but it doesn't. And then we're disappointed afterwards. You know, so much work I had to go through, so much endeavor, you know, and there was so much expectation, and it was quite short-lived. pleasure. And then we start looking forward to the next opportunity for enjoyment, and we get all expecting that. So we try to find pleasure in the expectation of pleasure. That's the next thing, because the pleasure itself is so fleeting. In Sanskrit, it's called chapala sukala. It's just there. It's like a drop of water on a lily leaf. You turn a little bit, it rolls off. Flickering. It's very temporary. So then, since the pleasures themselves are so short, then we start trying to work out a way we can get pleasure from the anticipation of the next pleasure that we're going to get. You know, we start thinking about, oh, I just can't wait till I go to Disney World. It's going to be such a great thing. Oh, I'm really looking forward to it, and it's going to be so nice, and I'm going to go. We're not actually there yet. We're not even at Disney World, but we're just, it's going to be great. I'm going to go, and we tell our friends about it. We talk about it, and we think about it. We put it on the calendar so many days. Oh, I'll. And we actually start trying to derive pleasure from something that we haven't enjoyed yet. Kind of borrowing, you know, on credit. Everything's on credit these days. So we also try to get pleasure on credit. Haven't actually got it yet, but I know it's going to be great. Or the other way we do it, because we're not always happy, we start thinking about, we try to get some more pleasure out of the things we already did. Oh, that was great. Wow. Wow, you should have seen. It was so great. Let me tell you about it. It was so good. I did this and that, and then, you want to hear some more about it? Okay, I'll tell you some more about it. It was great. And we take pictures to try to get a little more pleasure out of that thing that happened. Right? Photographs, we stick them. Movies. Take movies. We write a book about it. We somehow or other try to savor that, because the pleasures are they go by so quick. It was gone, and so I want to save it or get more pleasure. So photos, movies, letters about it, books about it, talk about it, think about it, dream about it, somehow or other try to savor those moments of pleasure. So actually, when we analyze what life really is in the material world, it's a few moments of pleasure, and then the rest of the time either aspiring to get more in the future, thinking about the pleasure we had before, or on the more negative side, the miseries themselves. The miseries that come, and the problems that we have to face. The biggest problem that we have to face in the material world is death. Has anyone made any solutions to that problem yet? Everyone's been trying. Best scientists, best brains. Everyone's trying to solve this problem of death, but we haven't seemed to solve it. I remember in about 1980, there was a Newsweek magazine came out, and some big medical scientists said that by the year 2000, death will be obsolete. They actually wrote it. I read it with my own eyes. Now here it is, 2000. The year 2000 has come. Have we made any progress on getting rid of death? No. As a matter of fact, there was a report out that although we've cured some of the diseases, but we found that some more diseases have come in the last 20 years that we didn't have before. And these diseases are, in many ways, even worse than the ones that we cured. But now these are worse, and some of the old ones that we got rid of, they're coming back again. You know how they do it? They work up a resistance to the to the medicine. So they've been working at it, and now these diseases are coming back in greater force. So that was the attempt to get rid of death has been unsuccessful. No one's been able to do it. And that's a big problem. And everyone has to face that problem. That my, whatever enjoyment I'm getting or I'm hoping to get or I had in the past and I'm trying to relish again may come to an end very soon. Sooner than I want. Nobody welcomes death. We don't like death. So what are we doing about that? I know we're spending billions of dollars on research to stop death, but we don't seem to be making any progress on stopping death. We're good at increasing death. That we're quite good at. Like nuclear weapons, really good at increasing death. With one nuclear weapon, we can very efficiently increase the death rate quite quickly in an area. People can die much quicker. We're good at increasing death, but not very good at decreasing. So with that kind of a problem hanging over our head, how can we be fully happy knowing that it's all coming to an end soon and I don't know when? And no one likes death. We don't know really what happens to us. And so that's the if we want pleasure, if we say that life is meant for maximizing pleasure, well, then we really have to address this issue of death. Because that's such a bummer, death. It really is. It ruins everything. So, all right, well, how are we going to deal with death? Well, we've tried medically. It's not working. Scientific. Now we're talking about cloning. Maybe I can get cloned. If I get cloned, maybe I'll, when this one wears out, and I'll have another one in the closet. I'll keep a clone. Just, you know, maybe deactivate him. A clone of me. So when this one wears out, I just kind of like, you know, the other clone, we set it. So automatically when this, maybe we set something to the heart on this one. You could probably do this. Computer, set a computer that when this heart fails, when it goes out, there'll be some electrical charge that the clone in the closet becomes activated. And he, you know, opens the door and comes out and takes this one and does a funeral, I don't know, something. Maybe have some little incinerator in each home. Because it might be a little embarrassing. You know, because there might be some differences. After all, the clone, I don't know if he'd be aware of all the things that I was doing. And he might not be able to continue them as well. Like at work, he might come in and they say, "So, what are you just standing there for?" "Well, I'm not really sure what I should be doing." "What do you mean you're not sure what you should be doing? It's ridiculous. You've been working here for 20 years. You're just standing there? Well, can you give me some clues?" There might be a few problems, but I'm sure we could work them out. We could have a backup. We could keep a backup drive and then kind of insert. I may be saying like this, but I'm sure there are people who are thinking even more far out things than this. Because it's really the problem is we want to go on living. If we talk about pleasure, for example, if you were told that we can guarantee you 24 hours of extraordinary pleasure, just one thing after the other, we can just bombard you with pleasure. And the the amount of pleasure you're going to get in that 24 hours will really be super. But the only problem is right afterwards you'll die. Now you can do that. You can get this huge amount of pleasure in 24 hours, or you can, you know, live your rest of your life and take whatever comes. Which would you prefer? You say, I'll take my life. I'll live it out. No one would say, give me 24 hours of super pleasure and then die. So my point here is that one of the most pleasurable things is living. It's just being alive, existing. So the first thing we need to figure out is how we can extend our life. And so far, nobody's been able to do it past 100 years. George Burns lived 101, I think it was, and then he died. So now we have artificial hearts, and maybe we can extend it a few more years. But it really seems to be limited by about 100 years. And that's not so long when you consider eternity. It's not so long to just live 100 years. It's like a flash. Wouldn't it be nice if I could live for all of eternity? Yes, that would be very nice if you could live. If you could just live for eternity, that would be great. You say, but how will I do it? I mean, the body seems to get old. It seems to wear out. The arteries start to harden up, and the circulation gets poor, and the brain starts getting weak, and the heart starts failing. What can I do? No, you won't be able to live forever in this body. That's a fact. But we can live forever in our spiritual. Actually, the soul, the living entity, is eternal by constitution. Bhagavad Gita says, Ajo nityam shashvatoyam purana nahanyate hanyamane shurire nitya sarvagatastanur. So the word nitya means eternal. Shashvatoyam means there's no end. The soul, the living force within this body is eternal, and it never dies. And that's why reincarnation is the correct understanding, because the soul takes on different bodies. That eternal soul takes on different temporary bodies. And when this body dies, or when this body is no longer usable, it stops working, we give up this body and the soul takes on another body. And the soul may take on material bodies, or it can resume, or shall we say, reactivate its original spiritual body, which is eternal. So we can eternally keep changing material bodies, or we can live in our eternal spiritual body. That choice is up to us. All we have to do is sign up for this plan or that plan. If we want the changing material bodies plan, then we sign up, okay, I want to stay in the material world and I want to take on all different types of bodies. Frog bodies, human bodies, tree bodies, I'll try out mosquito life, see how that is. Demigods. There's 8,400,000 different species. And we can go through all of them if we like, and we can do it again and again. We can go through all 8,400,000, and then we can start over again. Or we can go up sometimes and down, and we can jump around. That's one program. We can sign up for that program. Or the other program is we get our eternal spiritual body and live in the spiritual world with Krishna and enjoy unlimited pleasure in that way. So again, they're both available. Krishna gives everyone the choice. So some people, they choose to take plan B, going back to the spiritual world and getting the spiritual body. And if they do, then they practice bhakti yoga. So you could say plan B is bhakti. The bhakti plan. Bhakti means love and devotion. By engaging in loving devotion to Krishna, one attains plan B, lives there in the spiritual world. And by plan A, by just engaging in ordinary mundane sense gratification, he remains in the material world and he just keeps changing bodies and going through old age, disease, death, then another body, keeps the status quo. So that's the decision that we have to make. And every individual has to make his own decision. Nobody can make the decisions for us because we're all individuals. There's no two people that are the same. There's no two souls that are the same. They're all individual, and they all have their own particular desires. And so that decision we need to make in this lifetime. Of course, Krishna consciousness is to make the decision towards going back to home, back to the spiritual world and getting the spiritual body. Now, someone may say, that's okay, maybe if there is such a thing as the spiritual world and if there is such a thing as life after death and the soul, but there's no guarantee, and in the meantime, you're missing out on a lot of pleasure. So we, in plan A, we're getting a lot of, you may call it temporary pleasure, okay, whatever you call it, but at least we're getting some pleasure, whereas you people, in plan B, you're just putting all your hopes, you're gambling everything on this pleasure after death. And for now, you're suffering. Sleeping, you know, on the floor and shaving your heads and, you know, abstaining from some of the really good pleasures of life. Don't go to discos. So in reply, then those who are on plan B, they'll say, no, we're not suffering at all. In fact, we find that we're having more pleasure now in plan B than we were in plan A. Well, how is that possible? You've given up so many things that were pleasureful? Yes, we gave up some things that had a little bit of pleasure, but we took up other things that had much more pleasure. For example, we gave up eating Big Macs, but now we eat Krishna prasadam, spiritual food that's been offered to Krishna. So eating spiritual prasadam is millions of times better than eating Big Macs. Bloody, rotting carcass. What's so great about eating that? Even if you put some mustard on it and some ketchup. But eating the transcendental, blissful, spiritual food is billions and trillions of times. You say, okay, well, what about, you know, what about some of the other things that you have to give up? No, if you analyze each one, you'll find that plan B offers much greater pleasure. And as we discussed before, the pleasure doesn't diminish, but it keeps increasing. I can honestly say that I've been chanting now for 30 years, Hare Krishna. And I find more pleasure now than I did before. And it keeps increasing. In fact, my desire to chant is increasing. That's proof. And my desire to taste wonderful prasadam is also increasing. Prasadam is spiritual food, by the way. So anyway, we recommend plan B. We invite you all to sign up this evening for Plan B. And all you have to do is, just like in America, they have this thing with the phone, the long-distance carrier. You can, all you have to do is just tell them that you're canceling this phone company and you take on this one. So all you have to do is sign off this one and sign on this one, and then you're in Plan B, and you can experience more and more unlimited bliss. So thank you very much for listening. Maybe we have a little time, so if there's any questions, we can try to answer. If you think there was any sense in what we said. You have a question. Try to entertain a wish. Okay, we'll try to entertain it. Well, we can. Well, we'll see. Pardon? Yes. If there's any questions, we can translate if you feel more comfortable speaking in Finnish. Yes. Hmm. So yes, we have some prospectuses out on the table, so you can all take a look. But I'll just briefly mention that we've started a Vedic college in the United States. It's based on Srila Prabhupada's books. We have 84 volumes of these books, so it's quite a lot of Vedic knowledge, and it's systematically presented. And we are approved now by the state to award degrees, bachelor's, master's, and doctorates in Vaishnava philosophy, or Krishna conscious philosophy, and other practices. So it's a nice breakthrough. Our spiritual master wanted to establish this because he said that there are so many institutions of education, but no one's teaching about the soul. No one's teaching the difference between the body and the soul. And so now we have a educational institution that is presenting that. And so by Krishna's grace, we've been given a nice campus for the college. And it's an all-men's college. Because I'm in the sannyas ashram, and that's been my main service in the movement all these years, is training up the brahmacharis. So that's what it is, and so far it's quite successful. There are students there from the United States and from other parts of the world also. And I just got a letter today from the city council person, one of the main government authorities for our area. And it's a lady, and she was appreciating very much the work of the college, and she was praising the activities. So it's receiving very good response, and our students are very happy. They're living a Vedic lifestyle and studying the books. And they're getting degrees also. Yes?
Well, I've seen in India, like these Vedic universities, like for example in Sarnath, a little bit outside Varanasi, or Benares, or how do I like to say it? It's like, are you connected with these Indian Vedic universities?
No. We're standing on our own, in a sense, and as we've been given authority to, based on the Krishna consciousness movement. In other words, the authorities have examined our books, they've examined our our record as an institution worldwide, and they consider that we are authorized to teach, so we don't need to be... Yes. It's, yeah, we don't need to be affiliated. Although we've also affiliated with some universities in America. And I think that will happen more because we're the only ones that have this kind of education. And many of the universities appreciate at least having some of the courses available to their students. For example, when I was in Florida, we were doing another branch of this college, and a big university there, the University of South Florida, 40,000 students, they invited us to teach some of our courses for their students. So we did that. And that will happen more and more as time, because the universities are eager to get this kind of teaching. And in our field of Vedic knowledge, we are recognized as the authorities in this field because we not only study it, but we live it. This stick is called a tridanda, which means three rods, and it is a symbol that one has dedicated himself to his body, mind, and words. He's dedicated completely to the service of Krishna, and he has made vows that he will not become involved in any kind of material sense gratification. He won't marry or anything like that.
Is there a certain material, something like this?
Yeah, bamboo. Bamboo. It's good because when you go on the plane, sometimes you need to, it needs to bend a little bit to fit next to the seat.
Also, if you're walking very long distance, it's good that it's light.
Right. So it's made of bamboo. Some other questions? Yes. Why is it well? It's difficult because we've been in material. We've been in Plan A for so long. We've been in the material world for so long. We're so conditioned by that way of doing things. It's hard to change. If we were, for example, if you were born in a devotee's family, then it would be quite easy because as a baby, they would teach you to chant and take prasadam, and you would just be raised in Krishna consciousness. That's why it's a great opportunity to be born in a devotee's family. If a child gets that, it's very fortunate because then it's very easy. But we were not born in devotee's families, and we have become now attached. You know, or addicted, you could say. It's like, why is it difficult for a person addicted to heroin to give it up? Even if he wants to. Even if he says, you know, I've been on this heroin for too long and it's causing me so many problems, I'm going to give it up. He may try, but it's not easy because he's completely addicted. Therefore, in order to get free from that addiction, he needs to be in different association, he needs a different program. So that's what Krishna consciousness is. It provides different association and spiritual programs so that we can actually give up the addictions to the material world. It takes practice. But it is possible.